what Kitty Pryde, what's her name?
Shadow Cat.
Shadow
great
Cat.
Name. But they always
wait, just Kitty hold Pryde. On. Her actual name is Kitty Pryde?
No, no, no. Her code name's Shadow Cat.
Yeah.
So her but real name is Kitty Pryde.
Yeah. You thought her code name was Kitty Pryde?
Yeah. I thought because
the symbol on her costume was a cat with its paw sticking up.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 154.
Hey.
And we're going to talk some time travel shenanigans, right?
We are.
Indeed. We all went to the
theater. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
Good morning.
We all went to the theater yesterday. I actually went, I was at the movie theater at the same time as Ash. I almost went to the same showing.
That would have been so strange. Yeah. I would have snuck up behind you.
What's up?
Did you go of your own accord? Or
yeah,
you...
yeah, I actually did. I actually went to the movie theater, and we would have been in the same showing as Ash, but we got there early enough that we could go to an earlier session. So we went to that instead.
I would have been shocked. I would have been absolutely shocked if I saw you in the theater.
Right?
Like, what are you doing here?
Well, I figured I'd give it the old college try, and you know, it's Memorial Day weekend. I feel like that's something you're supposed to do. On a long weekend is go to the movies. So sure. We did. We tried it.
Overall experience was positive?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it, you know, it was good. It was a good experience. So
let's do the rundown.
Okay, so on the podcast, obviously we all saw X-Men Days of Future Past. We'll talk about Wolfenstein, The New Order. And
Yeah, no.
Talk about... It's good. Yeah, right. Good morning, everybody.
Sorry.
We'll talk about some other Marvel news. And in our Naquato, we ask, do you like time travel in movies? What was your least or most favorite use of it? It's very apropos.
Yes.
This is a very time travel-y, alternate timeline kind of show.
Indeed. Yeah. I was kind of surprised by how that all played out in the movie. But we'll get to that later.
Cool.
So right now, let's start with Matt.
Hey!
What's going on, man?
I too went to the movies yesterday, only a couple of short hours after you guys, but 1,000 miles away. Let's see. I picked up Wolfenstein. I'm not going to be able to say that name anymore.
I ruined it.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I binged Arrow season one on Friday and Saturday.
Whoa, that's a lot of Arrow.
Dude, that show, okay. It is a good show. Let me get that out of the way before I say anything else. It is a good show. I enjoy it. It does get way better, like, pretty much right where I stopped. I stopped at, like, episode 5 of season 1. And then from, like, episode... I'm sorry. Can you hear my dog right now?
No.
Okay. She's getting in the beanbag chair. For illustration purposes, my dog is 11 pounds and sitting in a human-sized beanbag chair, and it takes her an hour to get into it. So the thing with the show, though, is that while it does pick up a lot at episode 6 and continues to get better throughout the rest of the season, it is so frigging long. I kept checking, like, where am I in the season? I'm like, I'm only 12 episodes in, and there's 24 episodes?
Yikes.
Like, God. The show's an hour long.
Yeah, yeah.
So 24 episodes means 24 hours of TV to watch just for season one. And man, that is a lot of television.
Yeah, we've gotten used to the, you know, the AMC or HBO, like 12 episode seasons or 10 episode seasons. Yeah. So when you get back to the old school, like 23 episodes, you know, each 46 minutes each, it's really kind of an undertaking.
It is long. So, but on Netflix, it's nice. No commercials. And it just, autoplays the next one, you know, so I just kind of went through and watched a bunch of them. I think I'm on episode 19 or 20 of season one at this point.
Getting there.
Where does Arrow fit into the comic book universe?
It's Green Arrow.
Okay.
And they pull a lot from the DC universe, actually, surprisingly so. Like, way more than I expected. As far as, like, villains go and side characters and storylines, kind of all... come out of the weird thing is, so Green Lantern set in
Green Arrow.
Yeah, Green Arrow set in Star City.
Mm-hmm.
And in the comics. And the show seems to be pulling a lot from both Gotham and Star City, it seems like. I don't know if you've noticed that, Ash, but...
Oh, yeah, they're pulling a lot. And they talk about Bloodhaven and stuff a lot, too. Yeah. So they're definitely... I mean, when I joked around with Matt, I'm like, this is pretty much a great Batman show.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He has, like, a very similar origin story to Bruce Wayne. I mean, it's obviously, it's very different, but, I mean, the term... I mean, he has a secret identity. He's a billionaire. He fights crime at night. I mean, it's the same sort of basic...
Well, he was created to capitalize on the popularity of Batman. Like, I mean, that's like fully admitted. When Green Arrow was made, like way back when, I think in the 50s probably or 60s, he was literally made with a buddy named Speedy who was like basically Robin, and the whole goal of them was to sell comics because it was very close to Batman. They wanted to make like another Batman, essentially. But eventually, you know, right, like any character in the comics, once certain writers get their hands on it, they kind of make it their own story, and then it becomes its own. You know, he kind of gets fully fleshed out, has his own background, and that happens here too. But the show's really great. I mean, like, I have very few complaints about it. It gets a little CW-y at times, but for the most part, not too much. And I really love, like, I would say for any of the minor complaints we had about S.H.I.E.L.D. as far as like maybe not bringing in as many Marvel people as quick as they could, like Arrow definitely does not have that problem. I mean,
yeah.
I think four episodes in they introduce
Deadshot, right?
Deadshot, I think, is four episodes in, and then he's like two episodes in, and then Deathstroke is like six episodes in, and then the Huntress comes in. Like, they just start like ripping characters into the world like over and over and over again. Like every episode has like a character in it almost, and it's just done really well, written pretty well. The fight, like you said last time, I think, Ash, the fight choreography noticeably better on the second half of the season than on the first, but very good. Like the camera doesn't get all shaky. You know, it's not like, oh, they're
you can actually see what they're doing, which is cool.
Jeez, yeah, it's really cool.
The other thing while we're talking about this that I was kind of blown away, the scope, like the size of the show, it just feels big. Like they shoot out in what's visibly an actual city. So, I mean, you get to see these like, you know, large vistas and they're on rooftops and you're like, oh, they're actually out someplace shooting all this stuff. Well, it's not just like on a stage someplace.
Yeah,
and
it looks
gorgeous.
There is a lot of soundstage still, but I think it's all L.A.
I
think all the shots are L.A. Yeah, it looks like downtown L.A. I'm not positive on that, but it is really nice. It's done, shot really well, looks gorgeous. Like, I'm shocked. If you're hitting the summer TV schedule and you need something to watch, like Arrow really is a winner of a comic book show.
Cool.
Let's see what else. Played a little more Hearthstone. I know I've played too much because I'm starting to get annoyed with people who play exceedingly slow, because Hearthstone does this thing where you can see like what people are touching on the other side.
Oh, like,
you know
what they're thinking about doing.
Yeah, like you'll see cards get highlighted, or like you'll see them check out the guys you just played, or something like that, which is fine. But when I play somebody who like every turn looks at every one of his cards, and then every turn like takes 10 minutes to do so, I'm just like, oh my god, how do you not know what you want to do? Like, you've got to have at least the slightest clue. When you have like one mana or two mana, there's literally nothing you can do, so just like play your freaking little thing and let's move on with the game. And like, I just get so annoyed with it now, so I'm starting to take a break so that
they're trying to get you to quit. That's part of their
throw
strategy.
iPads. Yeah, they're just seeing if they can outweigh me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's pretty much been my week. So if we want to, how about Ash?
So I've been watching Arrow too, but, I, at the end of season one kind of ends on this note that Matt will see probably in the next day or two. And I was like, I need to see what the fuck happens in season two. So I actually bought this season two pass just through Xbox and I watched all of them. I watched them all in about, I want to say 2 weeks. Because it is a very, very long. So I actually just finished up season two this morning. I was at like episode 20 last night and I was starting to fall asleep. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. So I woke up at like 5 in the morning and watched like the last three. And everything Matt said is totally true. Like, I was shocked. I did not want to watch this show. Okay.
I remember you saying it was going to be dumb. You didn't want to watch it at all.
Yeah. I was like, I can't. I'm like, it looks so just, I thought it was going to be just this macho guy running around. You know, I didn't think it was going to have really any ties to the comic books at all. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it at all.
They don't waste the chance though to show him with his shirt off.
Oh
they,
yeah,
they
totally.
Do not waste that.
Totally. It's definitely bringing in the lady audience. But yeah, season two is you know even better than season one. They bring in more people from DC. There's a great tie-in to the new Flash show. So they actually introduce Barry Allen in season two of Arrow and kind of explain. You know, they more or less show his origin in Arrow. So you get to kind of see. Where the new Flash show is going to be coming from. And the thing I like about Arrow that I want to talk about is they do constant flashbacks. And while that may seem really annoying, the main origin story of the character is that he spends 5 years on this island. And when he left, he was like this pampered billionaire playboy, total asshole. Like any of us would hate him so much.
Yeah.
Like when he originally goes to the island, we would hate his guts. And it explains how he becomes the 5 years later, how he becomes the Arrow. So it's almost like this extended origin story that kind of goes right along with the regular season. So it'll kind of jump back and forth explaining, you know, how he is really becoming this hero. So the origin story continues in season two. And so we're kind of getting to see every year of his training, you know, as the show's actually plugging along, which is super cool. But season two is great, and I absolutely loved it. It gets a lot darker. The scale of the show at the end of season two is nuts. I mean, like, absolutely nuts. There's pretty much just, like, I don't even want to say. I don't want to spoil anything. But it's crazy and really well done. The other thing I've been doing is I played the heck out of Wolfenstein New Order, and that was a game that I was not – anticipating liking or picking up. So I, you know, it was at PAX and stuff, and I just kind of walked by and I was like, oh, another shooter. And we'll talk about it in the review section, but I ended up being very surprised by it. And
how did you pick it up if you did not anticipate picking it up?
The early buzz about 4 or 5 days before it launched was that, holy cow, this game is really good. And then I kind of started digging into who was making it. Mm-hmm. And the guys that Machine Games who made it are the ones who made Darkness. I don't know if you guys ever played that for 360.
Yeah.
And the Darkness was a really solid shooter. It had like a nice story to it. It had some really cool quiet moments. And I was like, oh, that team was actually a really good team. I'm like, I'm kind of curious to see what they would do with this IP. And then I saw the early morning like reviews of Wolfenstein New Order, and it was getting like 9s and 8.5s, and people were kind of freaking out that it was as good as it was. And so I just put in an Amazon and ordered it. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to get it. So,
nice.
So it was good. So it's been a fun week, actually. Work's kind of slowing down for me, so I got a chance to just be irresponsible. What about you, Scott? What are you doing?
I was going to say on that same note, you know what we've not heard a lot about? Mm-hmm. Review-wise, is Watch Dogs.
I haven't heard a peep.
I think people are getting super nervous about this game.
Still showing we'll up for Tuesday for me, but...
Yeah, I'm one of those early. Nervous people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm supposed to be picking it up tomorrow. But, you know, I think around 5 a.m. Eastern, you'll start to see some information pop up.
Yeah. The Microsoft Store... I think the Microsoft stores are doing a launch event, not like the Titanfall one. It's just during the normal mall hours.
Okay.
So I thought about trying to get over there if time permits, just to see what was going on, and then maybe just take a look at the game and see, you know, kind of what the vibe is in there. So.
And then cancel your pre-order immediately and run out of the building, or
no? I didn't create a pre-order. I just wanted to go. Like,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No. I'm leaving.
But what I did do. This week is I finally finished South Park Stick of Truth.
Thank God.
Yay. Right? And I don't know if this is how it was for you, but when I got to like maybe the last third of the game, I just plowed right through it. It was it was so like kind of interesting, and I guess one of the bad things is that you don't really pick up any new side quests sort of in the back half of the game. So
there's I looked up some stuff though, because I didn't 100% there's no more side quests, but there's a lot of crap to collect if you want 100%. There's a lot of junk in the game.
Yeah.
But I didn't 100%. I don't know about how close you came.
I did. I mean, like, when I got towards the end of the game, I had realized that I was pretty close. So after I completed the game, you're like allowed to roam around in the city when you're done. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get everything. I found out that some of the equipment pieces and the Chimpokemon were missable, but I had apparently picked up all the missable items over the course of the game. So I just went back and cleaned up the couple of things that I missed.
Wow. I think I collected all the Chimpokemon. The equipment, I definitely didn't come even close. I think I was like 50% on the equipment.
Yeah, the money was a problem, but then I read online that once you collect something, you can sell it, and it still counts towards your collection.
They don't care.
I thought you had to keep everything on hand the whole time. So at the end of the game, I was like really struggling for money, and I wanted to get the achievement for David Hasselhoff. So that's that's $175, and that's a lot of money in that game. So,
well, rumor has it we may do another We Need to Talk, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
we'll save that.
Yeah, we'll save that for We Need. Hopefully, everybody liked the Shield episode. If you didn't listen to it yet, go back and listen. Or if you haven't seen the show, go watch the show, then go listen. But the tentative plan is to do a We Need to Talk about Stick of Truth, because it's a pretty
there's a lot to say
game.
There's a lot to say about the game. Tries a lot of new things,
Yeah,
it's like a whole season of South Park. I feel like I just watched
it. Really is
a whole like a marathon to season of South Park.
A whole
really
season
good.
Of South Park with no lawyers telling them what they can and can't.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Oh, the ESRB meter is off the charts. That's great. So other than that, I've been playing Hitman Go. And since I don't really have a lot else to play right now, I went back to my PC and I started playing Splinter Cell Blacklist.
Now, was that the newest one that came out?
That is the newest one. And,
I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, I bought a new graphics card for my computer, and
nice.
They were doing a promotion like around Christmas time where if you buy the graphics board, you got Splinter Cell and Assassin's Creed.
Oh, cool.
So when I played Assassin's Creed, I actually played on PC, and the only downside is that both of the games were not on Steam. They were through Uplay. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know if I can play with anyone. I don't know if it's cross PC platform or not. I signed in last night.
It's multiplayer again, right?
Yeah, they have missions. There's a solo campaign, and there's a bunch of kind of extra bonus missions that you could either do solo or co-op. But one of them was like a horde mode, and I was like, I'm not going to go through 20 waves of horde mode by myself because that's just kind of boring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the game is great. Like, I'm really enjoying it. You know, there's not like a whole lot new, but if you like Splinter Cell, then play the game, right? It's like pretty simple. It looks great on PC, and I don't think it came out for like the current gen. I think it's only on like the 360 PlayStation generation. But it's a good game. So I think that's everything.
So today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,001 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/ratedNA. That's www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And you'll help out the podcast, and we very much appreciate it. We are fans of Audible. I'm still listening to Dad is Fat. I don't know if you guys are listening to
any. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that. That was I didn't start listening, but I just downloaded it.
Did you? Awesome. It's fun. It's fun listening to Jim Gaffigan just kind of talk.
I was going to say, does he read it?
Yeah, it's him reading. So
cool. That's awesome.
So it is a good book. But yeah, head over to audibletrial.com/ratedNA and help out the podcast. We would very much appreciate it. Thank you, guys. And get a free book. You know, why not?
Yeah.
You know what else needs help, you guys?
What's that?
Ant-Man.
Whoa.
News.
So I thought when I saw this, I did an audible, super long sigh because Edgar Wright has left Ant-Man. And I was totally shocked when I saw this because this movie's been in the making for about 6 years. He's already shot some footage. His fingerprints are all over this thing, but now he has walked away and he's kind of canceled his contract with Marvel, and that's that. So
I'm kind of wondering. I have two big wonders about this.
Yeah, I have a lot of wonders about this.
Well, yeah, but my big ones are, A, how did he cancel a contract with Marvel? I have heard those things are like ironclad and hard to cancel.
I know, right?
So he either walked away from a lot of money or I don't even know, honestly. Something that's surprising to me, I guess, is the first thing. The second thing is I'm going to miss him for sure, but the rumor is that his writing partner's still on, right? Like okay. Joe Cornish did not leave with Edgar Wright. Joe Cornish stayed and is still going to be supervising the script, still supervising the writing, and he's the one who did Attack the Block and Hot Fuzz. I think he did a couple other things. Cool. Adventures of Tintin, which is I never saw, but he did Attack the Block and Hot Fuzz are kind of big enough for me. Or did he write Hot Fuzz? Maybe he produced it.
Hmm.
Either way, he acted in Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, okay.
But he wrote Attack the Block, which is a fantastic movie. I wonder what's going on here, because it seems like most directors that have done something for Marvel doesn't seem like the worst partner in the world. They seem to give directors a lot of freedom as far as how they want to do the movie and the style that they want to do the movie in. Mm-hmm. Everything from Thor with Kenneth Branagh doing the first Thor was very like cinematic, kind of Shakespearean tale to, the way Whedon does the Avengers, the way Favreau did Iron Man. Like everybody had their own kind of little take on these movies. So I'm wondering what happened between... Is it just scheduling somehow? Something else that he really wanted to do finally came up and he took it, or?
I don't think that's it. So one little thing popped up yesterday I thought was really interesting. So James Gunn is directing Guardians of the Galaxy or just finished directing Guardians of the Galaxy. And he's actually really good friends with Edgar Wright. And James Gunn's kind of like a no-nonsense. I mean, he's like an old, comes from Troma, like kind of an old punk. So he's kind of an old punk, and so his take on the situation is pretty interesting. I'm just going to read a quote that he wrote on his Facebook. It says, "Sometimes you have friends in a relationship. You love each of them dearly as individuals and think they're amazing people. When they talk to you about their troubles, you do everything you can to support them, keep them together, because if you love them both so much, it doesn't make any sense that they should not love each other. But little do you realize, at heart, they're not meant to be together, not because there's anything wrong with them, but just they just don't have the personalities that mesh in a comfortable way. They don't make each other happy, although it's sad to see them split. When they do, you're surprisingly relieved and excited to see where their lives take them next." And that was specifically about Edgar Wright and Ant-Man.
And Marvel.
And Marvel. And he says, "It's easy to make one party right and the other party wrong when a breakup happens, but it often doesn't seem that simple, or perhaps it's even more simple than that. Not everyone belongs in a relationship together. It doesn't mean they're not wonderful people." So,
okay. So, yeah. I mean... Project's not dead, right? They're going to find another director.
Yeah, yeah.
Script is written, cast is cast. So chances are they're probably going to still try to find somebody with a good sense of humor. This would be the first major screw-up if they somehow mismatched a director all of a sudden, right? I mean, Marvel hasn't really done anything terrible up to this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think from what I understand, what everyone said, and I've heard, Joss Whedon speak about this on several different occasions, but... It's almost like a machine that you become a part of. Like you're no longer the auteur. You're not sitting there like pulling all the strings like a director does. You have this major conglomeration kind of lording over you, and they want to give you as much creative control as you can, but there's $1 billion at stake.
Right.
So it's like that, you need to create a certain product that fits into their vision for the cinematic universe. And if you're not doing that, it's not going to work for them. And so I'm sure there was some tension, and this is just speculation, but, Edgar Wright, he's a creative guy. He's always done things his own way. And being part of this larger machine may have just not worked for him,
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. But I mean, I'm bummed because I think he definitely does have his own, visual style and his own creative style. So seeing what he would have done with an Ant-Man film probably would have been amazing, but also it does have to fit into the big story,
Yeah, I'm bummed because I wanted to see Paul Rudd working with Edgar Wright. That seemed like a really awesome team up, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I it's hard for me to say until I see who they pick to replace him for director. It's hard for me to be like super pro or con on this because, like you just said, like the quote from from James Gunn said, sometimes things don't work, and yeah. I'd rather him leave, and maybe this is his, you know, wise choice too, to leave this early in the project and still have it be a salvageable project, as opposed to waiting until, you know, like they're getting ready to go into post-production and then he leaves and then they reshoot a bunch of scenes and then like everything doesn't make any sense anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this can be a much larger mess. So maybe it's still savable. Maybe it's early that it won't be that big of a deal, but
yeah, I don't even know. I mean, did they start principal photography and stuff? I think they did.
I think they did.
Certain, but
I think they did, but you know what I mean? It's not like they're yeah. nowhere near editing or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're still probably planning most of their shoots and maybe have done some basic stuff on sound stages at this point.
Yeah. That's a hard character to do too. He's not a Captain America, you know, he's very,
yeah.
he's not very well known, you know, outside of, you know, our circle. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, do his powers resonate with people? Do people actually want to see a story about a guy that can shrink? I mean, honestly,
but they do the universe that they've set up fits Ant-Man very well because they do favor the super scientist character. I mean, we've got Tony Stark, we've got, yeah, Bruce Banner.
Yeah, it's true.
Like when you see the Avengers, Bruce Banner and Tony Stark were like two of the main guys doing stuff in the movie. Yeah, you know, like the rest yeah. of the guys were punching things, which is great and a lot of fun, but like the actual plot was driven by the super scientists. So he fits well, I think, and I think Paul Rudd could be a pretty amazing Ant-Man because he is sort of this, he's like, if you've read the comics, he's sort of this like self-deprecating, you know, not a loser, but kind of, he's not macho Tony Stark, you know, he's not reserved Bruce Banner, he's like this weird, like, kind of down on himself but jokey guy,
yeah.
the way he's always been written, at least, so... he could work. I just, you know, like I said, I hope it's early enough that they can salvage it with a good director, and hopefully they pick the right match and don't just put, like, you know, person B into the slot because they couldn't get Edgar Wright to work out.
Yeah, they need to get a real kick-ass director in there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a bummer. So Scott, you have a bit of a press blitz.
Yeah,
I what is this? It's like a mystery.
I'm
like
really
mystery
excited about what this is.
No, what I thought I'd do was, you know, we get a lot of, I'm sure as many other media type people do, we get a lot of emails about things, so I'd actually just like to go through some of those items as sort of quick hit news items for you guys. Does that sound
sure.
okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first thing is the bridge. You guys remember the bridge? We met with Ty Taylor PAX East. I really liked the bridge. It was a puzzle game. He let us know that that game is now available for Mac and Linux on Steam. It was previously available on just PC and Xbox Live Arcade.
Cool.
Yep. That's so cool. Kudos to him. That's a great game. And if you've been waiting, I think you should definitely play it. The next piece of news is Squids. You guys remember Squids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
from our pals at the Game Bakers. That game is now available on Nintendo eShop for Wii U.
Really?
There's a game called, they basically reimagined the controls and they've repackaged the game into a title called Squids Odyssey, which from the looks of it, brings together the original Squids game, Squids Wild West, and then adds a new campaign to the game as well with a new character, additional hats, and I think some additional difficulty style tweaks and things like that.
Cool.
Yeah, so good for them. Really like those guys. And then they also did Combo Crew as well while I'm thinking about it. So
love Combo Crew.
Combo Crew is great. So if anyone is looking for a fighter on a mobile device that kind of takes a different approach to the control scheme, Combo Crew is a fun game. And if you do end up playing, let us know because we can try to get you linked up with our account so we can fight together. Okay, so in the next piece of news, a little bit of Harmonix news. They were doing a Kickstarter for their old game called, what was it called? Was
Amplitude.
Amplitude. Sorry, I was about to say Frequency. I think I was getting my games confused. So
yeah,
so they are looking at making a new game called Amplitude. I think they were going to bring it exclusively to Sony platforms, which is a bummer for us. But
yeah,
that was funded. But on the flip side, they also have...
It's coming out on PS3, though.
What's that?
It's coming out on PS3 and 4.
Oh, okay.
PS3 and 4, yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool, cool. So that game was successfully funded, and they got a bunch of cool musicians to contribute music to that. So kudos to them. Sean Baptiste, who was on the podcast last week, also mentioned that he was playing their free-to-play game called Rhythm Runner, which I think is
I played that. It was good.
Yeah. What does it do? It like uses your own music from your phone and kind of does something like Rock Band Blitz or something like that, right?
Yeah. So you very quickly it pulls from your library. So I played it on my tablet. I couldn't really imagine playing it on my phone. I guess it's possible, but basically it creates a track more or less out of whatever song that you create. And so you're playing as this character and you have to dodge and slide and jump over obstacles to the beat of whatever song you plug in. The only problem I had is it wouldn't allow me to use a lot of the songs that I owned because they are protected by iTunes. So iTunes kept saying like no, you can't use these. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to use? So I was able to use like a handful of songs, but it was really fun. I really liked it.
Awesome. So that's that. And then the next piece of news is, did you guys ever play Awesome Knots? I remember I reviewed Awesome Knots a long time ago.
Never played it. I always wanted to.
Yeah, I think what were you going to say?
I said, I think I played it.
Yeah, in my ignorance, I'm not like a big MOBA guy, but I reviewed this game because it looked interesting and the art looked cool. And it's a side-scrolling MOBA, and I think in my ignorance back then, not even really being familiar with the genre, I checked out the game and it was really good, and I guess I had fallen off with it, but they're still working on updates, which I think is really cool. And I think is important for a MOBA game if you're trying to maintain a connection with the audience. So they've been working on new features, adding new characters, kind of like tweaking the gameplay and stuff like that. So it was interesting to get an email from them about all the new stuff that they're adding to that game.
And it always looked awesome, but I'm terrified of MOBAs because I know how my personality works. Yeah, so I stay away.
I found it to be pretty accessible when I played it because it's like a 3-on-3 game. You kind of get these different Mega Man style characters. And because it's a 2D environment, there's just a lot of kind of platforming and shooting at one another. And there's a little bit of strategy involved in terms of, you know, where you go if you're going to attack or defend or kind of sneak around and try to get the upper hand on attacking the enemy base and stuff like that. But I found that game to be really cool. So it's nice to see that they're constantly updating the game and working on new features and stuff like that. So that is Awesome Knots. And then in the last piece of the news blitz is our pal Kat from Cosmic DJ that we talked about last week is actually a part of a different group called Clobit Games. And she is working on a new game right now called Capsule Force, which is she describes it as an 80s space anime four-player multiplayer game.
Whoa.
This also looked like sort of a two-on-two MOBA-style game, but it seems like it has more platforming and adventure-style elements. So it's not the same as Awesome Knots, and it's definitely got a great art style. I think 80s space anime is very, very sort of accurate. It's kind of got like a little bit of 8-bit influence with good art and good music and stuff like that. So I think that game right now is on Steam Greenlight. So that game is called Capsule Force. So if you are looking for something new in that genre to play and you just like platformers and shooting at people and MOBA-style games, I would recommend Capsule Force.
Cool.
So that's the news blitz, you guys. I thought I'd just try to get us all caught up in one kind of blast.
Also saved us some work.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying, you know, because these are things that are, you know, interesting to me at least. So I hope hope that for our listeners, that was useful information. So why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about X-Men Days of Future Past. And
sweet. Let's do it.
Sweet.
What would you do if Pop Tarts went out of business?
I don't know. They're so bad for you, I should probably not eat them.
They are pretty bad for you, yeah.
But I just wanted some sugar pretty badly. It's like eating two giant cookies.
Give me some sugar.
Water.
All right, we're back with our talk about X-Men Days of Future Past.
Men in Black, man. Come on.
I don't know what that quote is. Why would you quote Men in Black? That was from 1994.
Because Matt was like, I want some sugar.
So I thought it was appropriate to say that.
Oh.
I was just making fun of Ash, though.
Oh, boy.
Because I ate Pop-Tarts during the break, and they were delicious. So let's talk about some X-Men.
Cool.
We all went and saw it. Initial thoughts.
Did you guys see my Twitter joke? You want to hear my Twitter joke?
I didn't. Yeah, let's hear your Twitter joke.
X-Men, days of close-up face shots.
There were a lot of close-up face shots, huh?
There was a lot of close-up face shots. We also sat in like the fifth row. This theater was packed. I went with our friend Ryan, and the theater was packed. So we sat three rows from the front. And oh my God, it was like I felt like I was in Hugh Jackman's face over and over again.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of want to let Scott start off because I feel like you and I are going to get all comic booky, and Scott, I don't think has read Days of Future Past before, so I want to hear his kind of virgin thoughts, if you will, on this movie.
Well, that sounds like a good plan.
Okay, cool. I can't decide if I'm supposed to like this movie or not. That's kind of how I walked out of the theater. I enjoyed it. I thought it was entertaining as far as a movie goes that you sit and watch. But I can't really tell if I was actually supposed to enjoy what I saw as far as the narrative goes. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sure.
And I feel like what's unfortunate is that there is sort of a formula to these types of movies. And sometimes it is noticeable what the formula is in terms of how the scenes play out. You know, it's like, oh, there's an action scene to kick off the movie. And then there's like some narrative to tell you what's actually happening in the movie. You know what I mean? Like the I guess we should say that there's probably going to be some spoilers, right? Maybe like minor.
Yeah, we'll have to do a spoiler warning because I don't think you can really talk about this movie at all without spoiling it. Yeah. So
minor spoilers for the next, I don't know, 10 to 15 minutes.
Maybe some major ones, but definitely some minor ones.
Yeah, definitely some minor ones. Probably some major ones. But, you know, so there's you know, there's a combat scene at the beginning, but that was kind of like meaningless in some ways. And then it was like a time travel thing, which is, I feel like they kind of did to this what they did with Star Trek with J.J. Abrams. Is that accurate to say that?
Yeah, yes. Just retconning everything.
Yeah, because when I walked out of the theater, I was like, oh, I really like that. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, I was like, oh, wait a minute. The first three movies are totally blown away now and nothing matters at this point.
Yep.
Which is like that was kind of the thing that made me uneasy, which is why I wasn't sure if I was supposed to like it or not. So maybe you guys can kind of fill me in on what is happening comic book wise and what I may have missed.
Well,
okay. Well, let's start off by saying that
unlike the Marvel movies, like the Fox cinematic X-Men movies have like pretty much nothing to do. They take things from the comics, but they basically just do whatever the fuck they want.
Oh, really?
So it like really this is Days of Future Past almost in theme and in name only. Other than that, everything's different.
So there is actually a series called Days of Future Past.
Oh yeah.
In the comics.
Yeah, it's from 1981. I think like right around Uncanny like 150 or something like that. Very old.
Right? Is it where Claremont like kind of made his name?
Yeah, like this was when he was at really the top of his game, and really this is what sort of made X-Men. Like these really dark, serious stories that a lot of people really weren't doing at the time, and Chris Claremont, you know, really knocked it out of the park and really made the X-Men, no pun intended, but he humanized them a lot, gave them a lot of personality, a lot of character, a lot of depth.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls off this crazy time traveling storyline that no one was really doing at the time. And it's been a fan favorite ever since. So
I think that stuff in the beginning, like in the future time, I thought was really interesting in terms of just, you know, like you said, there, it turns them from super, it's really a story about people, right? And not necessarily about superheroes. Yeah. So I thought that was really good.
I just started your sentence again. I'd really recommend if you had all enjoyed the movie to pick up the trade called Days of Future Past. It's, mm-hmm. it's a huge trade. You get your money's worth when you buy it. And I want to say it's like 180 pages or something. It's really long. But it tells the trade that's out for it tells the entire Days of Future Past story, and it is really like canon wise one of the biggest X-Men books that ever got put out. It's pretty fantastic. So
who were the two, like there were a couple of mutants in the future that I did not recognize, who were they?
So Blink, yeah, there's Blink was the girl with the portals.
Okay.
And then there was Sunspot, who was the fire guy.
So that was not the other fire guy from the older X-Men movies?
No. There's a lot of fire guys in the X-Men books.
A lot of fire guys.
They're kind of interchangeable at this point.
Okay, that's fair.
And
then Warpath, right, was the guy. Is that his name, Warpath?
He was the dude with the guns, and he was getting charged up and stuff.
That's
Bishop. No, that's Bishop.
Bishop, yeah. Okay. And then... Yeah.
Warpath was the guy that would see the Sentinels coming showed up.
Oh.
Native American guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. And then there was... Was that... He was the guy with the knives, too? Was he the stabby guy at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Got it.
Yeah. So... Matt, why don't we talk about what you... We'll talk about what we liked first and then talk about what we didn't like. Let's do that.
Sure.
So what did you like about X-Men Days of Future Past?
Nothing. No. Let's see. I enjoyed the movie. There were some really good moments, I think, in the movie overall. I think that the acting that we get out of James McAvoy, out of I just blanked on his name, Magneto.
I forgot for this second too, but I'll remember in a second.
James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender.
There we go.
Hugh Jackman, I think, even, and then including backwards to Ian McClellan, and like the acting and the caliber of the actors that they get in this movie is superb. So I really enjoyed that. There's no point where I'm like, oh, this is so crappy. Like, it's not just done so poorly. That was all good. So the acting's really good. I think the directing is weird at times, but also was pretty solid. Like I said, the joke, I wasn't kidding. There are a lot. The moment I pointed it out to Ryan, he was like, oh, my God, there were a lot of close-up face shots. I'm like, I don't know why. They kept zooming all the way in on people's faces.
Yeah.
And it just got to me over time. I think that the Peter Dinklage is awesome in it too.
He's great.
Yeah,
He kind of is. He's one of those actors. He's like Philip Seymour Hoffman-ish, where you like don't even question. Like, you're not even looking at it as a role for an actor. It's just like he is that guy for that moment while he's acting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like anything I see Peter Dinklage in, it's just like, oh, that's who he is. Like, that's just, he just is that person now. It's always pretty amazing to me, but. I thought the past stuff was interesting. It's going to be hard to talk about without talking about the things I didn't like, because it bounces back and forth between moments where I'm like, oh, this is really good, to like, what are they doing right now? Like, it was uneven at best. So like the parts that were good were good. There was parts where I cheered and laughed. The fighting scenes for Mystique were once again really great. The rest of the fighting was, some of it was like, a lot of cool set pieces, but nothing that really – there was no – not that this needed to be Avengers by any means, but there was no scene where, Hulk punches a space alien out of the sky.
Yeah.
Like that
– Yeah.
That didn't happen at any moment in the movie where I was like, hell yeah. Like, it was just like, oh, okay.
How did you feel about the scenes with Blink? Because it was – they kind of did some like
Blink
portal,
stuff was amazing.
The portal combat.
Yeah. The portal combat was amazing, done really well, and looked awesome. I just wish they at all said who she was, what she was doing, and anything about her beyond just showing her throw pink portals around the sky. Because I can't imagine you not knowing who she is and coming out of that movie being like, yeah, I really like that new character girl with the eye things. And
yeah.
She threw the pink bubbles that everybody jumped through. Like, they didn't. No, did they even say Blink at all throughout the entire
movie?
I don't think they mentioned.
Yeah.
So
I think the only name I heard was Bishop, and I don't think anyone else was actually named as far as those newer characters go for the film.
I think they said Warpath once. I think they said Warpath cites there was a lot of exposition because nobody knew what the hell was going on, because they basically took a movie that had no setup whatsoever. Like, they're like, as opposed to all of the Marvel movies, this movie was not led into at any. The first 5 minutes is just Patrick Stewart talking to tell you what is happening right now, because there's no way you could at all know what is going on inside of this movie.
So this is stuff that you liked.
Yeah, this is all the stuff I like. I'm sorry, guys. I had so many problems with this movie. I walked out, like, I thought Ryan really liked it, and I didn't want to do what I'm doing currently right now to it. Yeah. So I just kind of was like, it was a good movie, and it is a good movie. I was not at all disappointed that I bought my ticket. I wasn't, but this is the same thing that happened to me when I walked out of Batman Rises or like Prometheus. Like, it's just like, it was good. I liked it, but there are so many ridiculous problems with this script and with the, what happened inside of it that I it's hard for me to talk about without saying the things I didn't like.
Can I ask
so
you
just,
a
we'll
question?
Move on to Ash. How's that? Okay. Maybe you liked more things than I did.
Okay. So stuff I liked, you said,
Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So absolutely. So
amazing.
I guess top of my list was Quicksilver, and I was anticipating, not liking him because of the screens I had seen of, you know, his outfit and stuff. I'm like, what is this? Like, this looks absolutely nothing at all like the character of Quicksilver. But it's interesting because it's a teenage version of that character, one that we've never really seen before. So so that was actually, you know, his action scenes were the absolute best in the film. Yeah. I feel like they spent more time and money on those scenes than any of the other ones.
On that one scene in particular.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that scene with Time in a Bottle was absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So Quicksilver stuff was great. I really do like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and it bothers me that no one has – here, I'm talking about stuff I don't like, but bothers me that no one has ever written him a good fucking Wolverine story. Like, Wolverine to me would seem like he'd be a very easy character to write. Like, he's a very gruff, like incredibly loyal berserker, and no one has ever really written that for him. You
and
know?
You've literally got one of the world's top film and theater actors to play the role.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely. So I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I liked McAvoy a lot. I like Fassbender a lot. I really, in terms of the fight scenes, the ones that stood out to me, the Quicksilver fight scene, and all of the future stuff was really well done. Now let's talk about stuff we don't like.
let me ask you guys a question about...
Yeah.
Because you kind of made me think of this while Matt was talking about what he liked, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is in terms of
that's
okay. In terms of the comics and the movies,
yeah.
when does one character refer to another character by their name, and then when do they refer to them by their like superhero name?
So this is what I loved about this movie, because multiple times they're talking about the characters, and you can tell which ones are really popular in Fox's eyes and which ones aren't, because they would say, "Yeah, what about Scott, Jean?" And Storm.
Yeah, like, that's exactly. I picked up on that same line too.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, we need to go get Scott, Jean, and Rogue. And you're like, what? No, this is you can't say one name and then use their fake name.
Yeah.
I don't know, Scott. There's no real answer to that. But
what is? I mean, when is it appropriate?
Jean's always had a huge problem with her code name. So Jean's code name was Miss Marvel, but there have been like 10 Miss Marvels, and then Jean's code name was Phoenix, but you can't call her Phoenix until after she becomes Phoenix, so it becomes this big issue. So Jean, they always refer to Jean as Jean,
but they clearly never said Aurora before, so they can't say it now. They have to just refer to her as Storm from here on out.
Uh-huh. What is Kitty's Pride? Kitty Pride? What's her name?
Shadowcat.
Shadowcat.
Great name, but they always
hold on. Her actual name is Kitty Pride.
No. Her code name's Shadowcat.
Yeah.
So her real name is Kitty Pride.
Yeah. You thought her code name was Kitty Pride?
Yeah, I thought because
the symbol on her costume was a cat with its paw sticking up.
I don't know. Did they have symbols on their costume?
No, she never
has. Okay. I really like Ellen Page. I think this film – I mean, maybe I always knew I liked Ellen Page, but I think this film kind of like solidified that for me.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. She is actually the main character in the comic book. She's the one they send back in time to save the world in the comic book.
Oh, so did that
Kitty Pride.
Did that raise a lot of nerd ire when that happened? When they
I don't think so, because Kitty Pride's barely been part of the movie universe. So, like, how do you send back your, you know, like, B-team character in the movie universe when clearly everybody loves Wolverine? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
So,
okay,
I actually don't have a lot of problems with what they did from the comic book to the movie. Like, that's not really where my issues with the movie arise, because I feel like the decisions they made that were different from the comic make sense for, like, character wise and, like, you know, certain things like that make sense for the most part in their movie universe, because I think it'd be really hard to build this movie around Kitty Pride. It would be a difficult thing for them to pull off when no one really remembers Ellen Page for the first part being in the third movie. You know what I mean? So I mean, maybe people do. I'm speaking in generalizations, but you know what I mean? She's not the A-list from this list of characters that they have.
That would have been like Anna Paquin, I suppose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Bob.
So, I mean, what do you guys want to start with? You want to start with the time travel? Do we want to kick it off with that?
Sure, let's do that.
I wasn't upset with what they were doing with the time travel until two things happened that I was like, wait, what? And the first one was when Logan's having problems, like getting Charles to join his side, early Charles to join his side. They like mind link old Charles with young Charles through Logan.
Yeah.
To like convince him to join the, to do what he needs to do. And like Ryan and I both said to each other, I was like, why did they just do that originally? Then like, what? Why wait 3 hours or 4 days in movie time to like fix this problem that you clearly could have fixed immediately by just saying, hey, hold on a second, hold my head. And then he holds his head and they're like, oh, cool, everything's great. And then like they move on with life. Like when they broke it that way, I was like, well, wait, then now you can just do anything. Like you could literally just do anything at that point. Like old powerful Charles could just fix all the problems of the old world through Logan's brain all of a sudden. It was the first problem. Mm-hmm. Second problem is less of a problem with how they did time travel, but with what happened afterwards, which is, can we do, if you don't want to hear anything, this is a humongous spoiler. So please hit pause or fast forward. Like
you've
minute.
Been warned.
This is a gigantic
Reaper sounds spoiler. Incoming.
At the very end of the movie, because I have a massive problem with this, I have to say this, and I'm really sorry. So spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. The very end of the movie, Logan wakes up, and he walks out, and you're in your future time, and everything's fixed. And he walks into Professor X's office, and Professor X is like, hey. And he's like, where am I? Or something like that. And then Professor X goes, oh, I see you've woken up. What the fuck happened to 40 years of Wolverine's life? The new Wolverine woke up and he no longer remembers anything that happened? Like, what? What? Did it obliterate old Wolverine? So there's a Wolverine in some other timeline now that had 40 years of history that just literally disappeared into the ether that, like, I don't...
Well, I think they retconned the Wolverine films, too. So, like, they're basically saying that he got his... They show he gets his claws the same way. Mm-hmm. But all the Wolverine films that have been out, they erase those too. And basically, it was their way of just saying like, boop, like, here we go. Like new X-Men stuff.
But why make Wolverine forget? Like, why? Like, how did he wake? He wakes up. Like, why did it take 40?
Yeah.
So the day that he started to time travel, he re-wakes up in at that moment and doesn't remember anything that happened for 40 years. He only knows his old timeline.
So like the day. Okay. So in the future, in the new brighter future time.
Yeah.
Right. He wakes up and then he doesn't know what's going on. So what you're basically trying to say is that the day before that. Whatever he did that day, he went and got
totally
lunch,
fine.
He taught classes, he remembered everything that happened, like, everything was cool, and then he wakes up the next day, and he goes, oh, look, it's Jean. That's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't just retcon, like, the nasty future, they retconned Phoenix storyline, they retconned
everything.
The first three films,
decades of comic book history, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, they just retconned it in a moment. So, I just don't even.
Here's
like
you know, here,
that
I got
brings
something
up
else
other
for you
problems
too.
Though. Like, so when they were doing it before and they were just backing up a few days at a time, like, did Bishop not wake up and have to have everything re-explained to him every time? Like, was he like, hello, hey guy, oh, what's going on? Where am I? Oh, we're getting killed by Sentinels right now. Like, there's so many problems with how they just like all of a sudden blipped time travel. Like, anyways,
here's the other thing is, you remember before Logan goes to sleep, right? The professor tells him, he goes, okay, so when you come back, if everything works out, nobody's going to remember what happened. Only you are going to remember what happened, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the thing, is that he did go back in time and did explain to Beast and the professor and a bunch of other people, like, hey, I'm from the future. This is what the future's like. So these people now know. They have some knowledge of what's going on, so
of what the future would have been,
right? So when Beast sees him in the hallway and he's like, getting a late start today, huh, Logan? It's like, hey, you know what the fuck I did, I told you 50 years ago, you know, like, haven't we discussed it since then? Have we had no conversations about this? Like, Yeah. Since I time traveled back to you and told you we were going to be friends someday, like, what's the fucking deal?
Also, well, in a world where a dude can control metal, other guys can read anyone's mind, there's a lady that can shapeshift, is time travel really the most shocking thing you've ever heard in your life when Wolverine shows up at your doorstep and he's like, hey, I'm from the future, and you're like, no, I'm sorry, I need to draw the line somewhere, and time travel's where I'm drawing the line. You're going to have to convince me of this, future Wolverine.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean that kind of ties into our Naquato in a little bit, but there are a lot of problems with time travel storylines, and it, in a lot of ways, it's just a way of lazily changing things, mistakes that you made in storylines or what have you. I mean, you can rewrite things that have already been written and change things up, and that, I mean, that kind of segues into a lot of the problems that I had with. I think the problems for me, because I grew up reading these characters, and they're going to sound just like angry comic book nerd like rants, but there were a lot of, like, tonally the characters were just kind of weird. Like, there's a scene where Magneto, and this is also a spoiler, Magneto is like going along for the ride, and they're going to try and stop Raven from assassinating Peter Dinklage, and they stop her from assassinating Peter Dinklage, and then all of a sudden, out of fucking nowhere, he's like, oh, we have to kill her. And you're like, wait, why?
Yeah.
Like, why? Yeah. Hold on a second. You have a sexual relationship with this girl. Mm-hmm. You've been fighting along her side for the past, like, 10 years. Why all of a sudden do you want to kill her? Because he gets this idea that this is the only way to save the timeline. Well, surely there's another way. It was just a stupid writing decision to make Magneto the villain. Like,
his whole storyline was weird. Everything, like, his tonally, he shifted back and forth between these, like, weird, awkward tones. Like, he decides he needs to kill Raven because if she kills him, then it's going to prove him right. But then he flips 180 degrees and decides that he needs to murder everyone.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't murder everyone, like, then somehow they would, like, it didn't make any sense. It was like, well, now you're just proving the same thing they thought they were, like, his character was just, I don't know what they were. Also, why did they free him? At what point did they need him at any point in time in that movie?
Because the idea was like, well, we need Professor X and Magneto together to convince Raven, which they did, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to kill her. Like,
yeah, hold on a second.
But basically, it was just Professor X convincing Raven the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did very little in the convincing department to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like...
Oh, my other huge, huge qualm is... So Magneto, using railroad tracks, rewires top secret Sentinel technology using railroad tracks. What the fuck was that? And was
he programming binary and magnetic pulses or something?
I don't know, but, like, honestly, like, I don't. I sound like such, like, an angry nerd right now. But, as soon as I saw him, like, putting the railroad tracks into the Sentinels, I was like, what is he doing to them? And then I'm like, oh, now they serve him. I'm like, that doesn't make a fucking lick of sense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. Even if you're not a comic book person, it's just not something, like, you can't reprogram robots with railroad tracks. Like, they're not fucking tiddlywinks. You're not building Legos. Like, what are you... So, I don't know. That was just weird to me.
I've got two other Magneto questions.
Yeah.
One, if you're the most wanted person on the planet, how do you walk around freely for days in public and no one knows that you're the guy who killed the president and that you should be, like, maybe taken into custody at some point? You literally just you put a hat on and a jacket and everybody's like, well, I don't know who the fuck that guy could be. He's got a hat and a jacket on.
Yeah.
That could be anyone in the planet.
I don't think we were, like, the general public knew that he was supposedly the one that killed JFK. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But
I don't know.
But that's a really good point.
The second one is, again, I just hope that people just skip this entire review if you haven't seen the movie yet, 'cause this whole thing is just laden with spoilers. He picks up a baseball stadium for seemingly no reason, puts it around.
He wanted to create a gate, a fence around there.
Sure. Yeah, that was the most effective way to do that. An amazing looking scene, knocking how cool it looked. It looked cool. It just whatever. Places it around the White House, picks up the president and all his Secret Service out of the ground, threatens to kill them all. They stop him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stop the guy. And then they stop stopping him. And instead of just going like, oh, thanks, and then killing everybody, he goes, I'll just fly away now. Like, and just flies away for no reason. And I'm like, wait, like, he was fully in his own control at that point. He easily could have pulled off the thing he still wanted to pull off, but seemingly for no reason decided this was no longer important. And then just like hovered away, like, well, into more movies. Like, that's like, he's like, Charles, you know, if you let them keep me, that they're going to kill me. And he's like, I know. And like, that was seemingly saying like, Charles, you know, if they let them keep me, there won't be any more Magneto in the movies. And they're like, I know. And then they just let him go. Like,
I think every X-Men movie ends with the same thing, which is like, you know, Magneto and the professor just go, you know, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. And then they just walk away. Like, we fought for 2 hours and we'll see you next time. Yeah. You know? You
also, should have killed me when you had the chance, Charles.
Yeah.
How did they clean up the baseball stadium?
It took 50 years to do it.
It's like a lot of demo. Yeah.
I know. Now we sound like we fucking hated this movie. I enjoyed the movie. I had a good time.
I did too. Yeah.
There were people that were saying it was better than Captain America, the latest Captain America, and I was after I left, I was like, no, not as good as the latest Captain America. Good, probably I would say one of the better X-Men films, but
I think First Class is better than this film.
Yeah, I think I liked First Class better just due to the lack of like weird plot decisions that just make no sense, like. There were still some of that in the X-Men First Class, but it was to a much lesser degree because they weren't fucking with time and everything else. But
yeah. Do you think that the Marvel movies have spoiled us in terms of like the quality of the fight scenes and stuff? Because I was waiting for like, you know, an Avengers or even a, you know, a Captain America 2 fight scene at the end of this. And we didn't get it. It turns into monologuing in all these films, and then people like throw one punch. I mean, we saw Wolverine fight a Sentinel for 20 seconds in this movie.
But you guys realize they neutered all of the superheroes. At every point, at least one point in time in all of this movie, somebody did not have their powers or couldn't use their powers and basically were just a dude walking around,
you're right.
It's fine for like an X-Men movie, sort of, because then you get to, it's supposed to be like, X-Men have always been a bigger allegory and have always been like more of a, you know, story about people, quote unquote, or mutants.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But like when you take the metal off of Wolverine and then you pit him against the Sentinel, like clearly there's nothing he's got bones. They're going to snap off in the middle of a Sentinel. Mm-hmm. When you make Charles Xavier, which by the way, I didn't even get into that, but the entire storyline of him being able to walk and not use his powers was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. There's a serum that fixes his DNA that somehow fixes his paralysis, but then it hurts his brain. Like, and if it fixes paralysis, why don't they release this fucking thing for the world to have so that no one is paralyzed anymore? But no, that's a side note. Because
he got paralyzed from a bullet too, so he actually had no spinal damage.
Has that ever happened in the comics? Has he ever walked for some reason?
Yeah, but it's really super complicated, but alien technology fixes him, basically. Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyways, I was headed somewhere, just left.
You're talking about the professor.
Oh, they basically, it was a lot of talky and not a lot of fighting because they neutered these guys at halfway, you know, and ladies halfway through, which is what made the future fight so awesome, was because it was like a bunch of fully powered mutants fighting Sentinels, which is cool and I enjoy, but it was shown in glimpses. Mm-hmm. And the best parts were Blink's fighting scenes because they were done so amazingly. And it made me think like, well, damn, if the other 2 hours had any of that 15 minutes of fighting, it would have been a pretty fun movie. But instead it became this like, we're going to tell you a story about how we're resetting the universe. And it just was really, I don't know, the whole thing. And I know it sounds like I hated it. I really didn't hate it either. I did enjoy it.
Yeah,
I walked out like totally satisfied as far as it being a movie. It's just when movies try to get so far up their own ass about story, sometimes, like especially a comic book movie, it gets to me sometimes. I'm like, why? Like it makes the plot holes look so much worse. Because Avengers has plot holes in it. Captain America has plot holes in it. I'm not an idiot. It's a comic book movie. At some point you're suspending, you know, disbelief and just enjoying the ride. But when you make the movie not as much of a ride and just all about, you know, how you're going to get into this story, it kind of opens up these like,
Like you were talking about, God forbid they would have showed Professor X, Magneto, Wolverine, Mystique, Quicksilver, and Beast fighting those Sentinels at the end of the movie for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
God forbid we got that.
Yeah.
You know what
also,
I mean?
Why did Like, why did they send Quicksilver home?
Because
they're like, hey, we need you to break into the most. Yeah, we need you to break into the most secure building in the world and release the most powerful mutant to date. And then we need you to just kind of take a car and go home, because if you're in the rest of this movie, we feel like you'll solve all the problems really easy. And we don't really need that to happen. So please leave, because you're going to break all the storylines that we're trying to tell for an hour and a half.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Should we move on?
No. So more things wrong with this movie.
One last thing. When Storm got stabbed, spoiler, we're still spoiling everything. When Storm got stabbed at the end of the movie, were you guys just kind of like, huh, oh well.
Yeah.
I was like, that's too bad.
Yeah. When Colossus got ripped in half, I actually got a little sad, amazing. Though.
Yeah. Okay. We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I think that's the thing. So I want to wrap it up because, I was just shitting on the movie for 15 minutes. Okay. I think that it had a lot of high notes. I think there was some really great fights from the future parts. I think that, you know, even some of the storytelling was interesting, and the characters are always done really well by those actors. But it just sometimes they would just open up those plots that you're like, wait, why? Like, the moment you start thinking about it, you're like, why did that happen and not this? And I think that's because we have been spoiled by the Marvel movies and to a large extent by the Batman movies, where you've seen these movies get done to pitch perfectness, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the Marvel movies are fun. They're a good time. You walk out, you remember the cool things that happened in it. And it was still an entertaining story, but it never got so far up its own ass that you were like, oh, wait, what? Like, it was always kind of like, oh, cool. It was just, you know, they punched space aliens for an hour. That was neat. which is fun.
Yeah.
And then Batman was always this dark, gritty, just nailed the tone of Batman, which made you feel like you walk out and you're like, that was so amazing. Like, Batman was so cool. In this movie, and I think to an extent a lot of these Fox movies, you walk out and you're just kind of like, huh. Like, what did they just do with the X-Men for an hour and a half? Did I watch an X-Men movie, or did I watch
Jumper?
Jumper.
So... I don't know if you guys had a different feeling when you walked out. I just kind of walked out I enjoyed it, but it was definitely kind of a, okay.
Yeah.
It was a take on the X-Men, I guess.
Oh, one last thing. What do I need to know about Apocalypse?
Oh, Apocalypse was the first mutant ever in history. He existed in ancient Egypt, and he basically becomes the bringer of death, and he organizes the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse to kind of rewrite the world in his own vision of what he believes the world should be like. So he's very bad. He's supposed to bring about the end of days.
Okay. Sweet. Thanks.
Yeah. No problem.
Also, do you guys think they retconned it because they don't want to recast it?
I honestly have no idea what they're going to do with it, because they can't, Famke and they're all too old now. You can't have the 50-year-old X-Men running around. You know what I mean?
So, I know, I agree, but seemingly they could have not done this movie and then just completely rebooted with a new cast, right? And just
Spider-Man
they're going up against Apocalypse.
They honestly need to just start over at this point. I'm not saying it to be a dick. I'm saying that because my closing thoughts on this movie is that I feel like this movie existed because they wanted to bring the cast of First Class together with the original cast, and the entire story of this movie was just to serve that purpose. They wanted to get those actors from those two movies together to sell tickets. And it's not that it was a terrible story. It's just it wasn't – I feel like the Marvel movies exist to tell a story, and then they have great actors to assist in telling the story. This was, okay, how are we going to get these actors into a story?
Mm-hmm.
So it was just kind of a, a paste it together kind of job.
Gotcha.
But I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, but I really do feel like it's time to start over.
And as far as selling tickets, they accomplished that. I don't know if you guys heard.
Yeah, I heard it did pretty well.
$261 million worldwide on the opening weekend.
Wow.
The fifth largest Memorial Day weekend opening of all time. And I think the it's the third or second of Fox's movies, second largest opening of any of Fox's movies.
Mm-hmm.
So not doing too shabby for itself.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's move it along, because we're running out of time.
We are. Sorry. Okay. So let's talk quickly about Wolfenstein: The New Order. I almost said it how Scott said it, but Wolfenstein, the New Order. And like we said in the introduction, this wasn't a game I was really anticipating liking or picking up, but I ended up doing so. And I'll start off by saying I really enjoyed it. I beat it a couple days ago. It took me probably about 12 to maybe 15 hours to beat. And the general premise, it's a kind of an old-fashioned shooter. But the thing that really stood out for me is it does this, something similar to X-Men, that it creates an alternate timeline. And in this alternate timeline, the Nazis win World War II. And the thing that, to me, as someone who really loves history, they actually explain a lot about how the Nazis pull off winning World War II. And you find like a series of newspaper clippings and things throughout the game that kind of explain the whole story of the war and what the Nazis were able to accomplish. And the short version is they were able to build the atomic bomb first, and they end up bombing New York City, which causes the United States to surrender. And the United States surrendering ends up making like D-Day really not happen, and so on and so forth. So it's a really interesting take on what the world would have been like had the Nazis won the war. So good stuff. Other than that, like the things that really stand out to me as like huge positives for the game is that it doesn't mind slowing down and actually letting you have really like powerful moments with supporting characters. And I can't think of a shooter in recent years that's really done this. So rather than just having you go level after level after level of just like shooting nonstop, kind of like a Call of Duty, this actually gives you downtime at a headquarters, and you can like talk to similar to like time you'd spend in the Normandy talking to your crew. Right.
Oh, cool.
So you actually have other, I guess, survivors or other resistance members that you meet along the way. And you're living in this, resistance camps, like kind of underground bunker type place. And you can talk to them and learn their histories and do little side missions for them just in and around the camp, like finding items for them. And, it is really – you get to know the people that are in the game very, very well.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it makes, the events that occur with those characters really, really memorable. Like you genuinely – like to me, I became attached to a lot of the people in the camp. And honestly, and I'm not just saying this, I think some of the best voice acting in a very long time in a game. Like it is really, really well acted. Like it's super gritty and very, very dark, but I think the acting is pretty awesome. And also Brian Bloom, who is the voice of Varric, he plays BJ Blazkowicz. So you get to see Varric see him being a Nazi stomping kind of killing machine for 12 hours. So Varric's voice. What do you think, Matt?
I'm not as far. I haven't beaten it yet, so I don't think I'm as far as long as you because you beat it. Mm-hmm. But I have two things. One, I downloaded this game. I bought it on the X-Men. X-Men. Where am I now?
Hey.
I bought it on the Xbox Marketplace, and this is the first game I've bought digitally that isn't Titan, because Titanfall you had to download, I think, 100% before you could play it, probably due to it being a multiplayer. This is the first one I've been able to do the progressive download thing, and it works really well. It was like 10 minutes into downloading, I was like, you can start, and I was like, oh, and I started playing, and then it just kept downloading in the background while I was playing, and no hiccups, no problems, so that was pretty neat. I too picked it up just because I'd heard some positive buzz, and I've been off of my Xbox for so long that I just wanted to play something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, well, this is out. I'll give it a shot, something before Watch Dogs kind of hold me over the weekend, and picked it up, started playing. I will temper Ash's statements with saying that none of what Ash is talking about happens for like an hour to maybe I just played it slow, but an hour to 2 hours where you're playing what is initially a pretty standard shooter, and you're kind of running through killing Nazis, and it's fun. There's nothing wrong with it. I was feeling kind of thiefy, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, oh, they took an old franchise, didn't do much new with it, and just made it look really, it looks gorgeous, like made it look nice and made it play well, which is great. But like I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do 10 to 15 hours of this. And then, like, you get to a certain point in the story, and it does the wipe screen, and then, like, the Bethesda logo comes up, and you're like, oh, oh. I just played the intro. Like,
yeah, it is cow, a good it, an, a good 90 minutes, you know, to two, yeah. 3 hours in before you get to the intro. Like
a two-hour tutorial I just played. And then the game completely shifts, and that's where all of the interesting story stuff starts happening. I mean, there's a little bit of the story stuff in the beginning, but it's really kind of superficial. Mm-hmm. And then after that intro period, you're like, oh, and it becomes a totally – not a totally different game, but a new experience within that game.
So like that first portion is just like, hey, it's a shooter, and like if you rented the game, this will get you hooked on it and all that stuff.
Yeah. If you'd play it and you'd be like, okay, it's a pretty slick shooter. Like it works well and it's very It feels like Wolfenstein. Like it really does. The way
what
you
they call the only first thing, 15 minutes, you know, the first 15 minutes for the marketing part. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think the only minor like annoyance I had was pressing X to pick up ammo and armor and stuff.
There's a lot of that too. You get constantly running around picking up stuff. Yeah.
Do you find yourself just like killing everyone and then just running around the floor jamming on X like to pick up all the stuff?
Need to pick up? One thing the picking stuff up I actually really love is that there is a scarcity for ammo in this game, so you can like the original Wolfenstein. Which is an Easter egg. You can actually play the original Wolfenstein. He can have nightmares, and he has nightmares when he's at the base, and the nightmares are the original Wolfenstein.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you can, but you have to run around picking up ammo constantly because you run out. You'll run out of machine gun ammo and be like, "Fuck! All I have is a knife and a pistol." So you'll have to play it for a while with a knife and a pistol, which I actually really like. I like that it's not unlimited ammo. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. I love the sneak up kills. That kind of stuff always gets me. You kind of can play your own style, which they not perfectly, but they do let you play kind of in your own system, and then they reward you for playing in that style, right? I mean, is that the best way to put it?
So there is a stealth mechanic. It's pretty basic, and it kind of reminds me a bit of what's the game with the crazy guy with the mask that I can't remember right now?
Dishonored.
Yeah, so the stealth is similar in a lot of ways.
It's that style, yeah. So you can run up and stealth kill people like without them and take out officers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's different ways to play the game, which I really kind of liked. And there's skill trees to unlock, so you do a certain number of things. Like if you assassinate 10 officers, you'll get a bonus to your assassinations. Or if you like to fight a lot from cover, you'll get a bonus to like magazine size. So there's all sorts of little unlockables depending on how you play the game, which I thought was pretty cool.
I thought that was really cool and relatively unique. I don't feel like I've seen that a lot in games where it doesn't just reward you for like playing and then you pick how you want to play. Like you know what I mean? Like it literally rewards you for how you play the game and rewards you in a way that gives you bonuses to playing the game that way, which is really interesting. And I think a unique way to create a skill tree. It's like, oh, you clearly, because the first one I unlocked was the stealth kills, and it's like you stealth kill like 5 people and then you get a bonus to like sneaking or something. Yeah, you can like sneak up faster, and the skill tree will continue to grow as you continue to play the way you play it, and it's really interesting. I thought it was a good way to do things. Overall, like a really pleasant surprise. I don't know that I would, if given the choice again and there was a ton of games out, I don't know that I would spend $60 on it, but I thought it was a really fun game, a really cool take on Wolfenstein, and that might just be because I'm not like super shooter dude, not necessarily that it's in no way is a knock on the game. But if you're like in that dry spell, I don't know, did the same guys make the 360 version and everything else?
I think the Xbox One version is just up-resed.
So maybe it's a safe buy on all systems, I guess is what I'm saying.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, fun game, absolutely worth the money. You know, if you're into shooters, you definitely need to play it. And I really did enjoy it. Was though for an hour and a half, I was going like, oh god, I just spent $60 on a re-resed Wolfenstein.
Yeah,
and then it was like Bethesda, and I was like, oh,
oh wow,
I haven't even gotten halfway into this game yet.
Yeah. So, no, cool. I guess my closing thoughts. There is a lot to this game, like. Other than just shooting. So they, like I said, they do a lot with characters. They do a lot with story. It's a really adult story. It's a really gory and gritty game. I want to say it might've been Polygon that said it, but it's almost as if you took the Wolfenstein universe and kind of injected it with some Quentin Tarantino. So it's really well written, really well acted. incredibly, incredibly violent. And some of the action set pieces are some of the best I've seen in a shooter in a very, very long time. So all the weapons are well designed. They have alternate fires. All the levels themselves are really well designed. There's a lot to do, a lot of secrets to uncover. So if you're looking for, you know, a single player shooter, no multiplayer at all in this game.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a single player shooter, like Matt said, to kind of tide you over until everything else starts coming out this fall, then definitely, definitely pick this up. It's a good 12 hours of your time.
Cool.
It feels like, other than it being really hyped at PAX, it does feel like it got released in sort of a low, like, if it got released, I feel like, in a way that mostly bad games get released, which is like, let's just put this game out.
Well, yeah.
Like,
it came out for Memorial Day. You know, that's kind of the angle.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah.
Kind of
true.
From a marketing standpoint, yeah.
But yeah. So anyways, good game.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. Pick it up.
It's good. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our Nerd Appropriate Question of the Week, which is all about time travel.
It's Ashley Eckstein, voice of Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars The Clone Wars, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So this week, in honor of X-Men Future, Days of Future Past...
Which we actually really did like.
We did like. I know, I feel like we have to keep saying that because we did crap on it for like 20 minutes. In honor of that, we asked you about time travel. Do you like time travel in movies? What was your least or most favorite use of it? You know, and you guys gave us a bunch of good answers, so let's jump into it.
Who wants
first
to go
up
first?
Is Alyssa at Lissabits says, hate it in all capital letters with an exclamation point. I just didn't feel like yelling at you guys this morning. I liked Looper until the end where it unraveled, as all time travel movies do. Bill and Ted is the only quote unquote good one.
You know, Bill and Ted actually did a pretty damn good job with their time travel. I mean, other than the fact that they would have created multiple paradoxes by having all those characters have memories of the future, but it was still really good. So Kate Dollarhide, who's at Knight D, she says, I'm more interested in space time travel, like in Contact or that one episode of Stargate Universe.
Oh yeah. There's some space time travel in the Ender's Game books as well. The Ender's.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Yes. In the way that you're talking, yeah. Where, like, basically he's moving at a speed.
Yes.
It has to do with speed, like light speed.
People aging differently due to space-time travel.
Yeah.
Okay. Haggis McHaggis says, least was 12 Monkeys. It felt really forced. Best is Star Trek First Contact, mainly for vengeance-driven Picard.
Wasn't
First Contact the one with the whale?
I don't remember.
I
am
either.
Not a Trekkie. I fully admit it.
All I remember about this Star Trek movie is he goes back to the 80s, and they're trying to rescue a whale so that this whale can talk to some sort of space probe, because the space probe only speaks whale. It was a good movie. Am I next? Yeah, I am.
No, I'll go. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Is it me now?
Sorry.
Sure. Let's figure this out on the podcast.
Okay, good.
Carlo at Platinum Fist said, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was the most triumphant, and the source material of Back to the Future was a bit heavy, but great.
Heavy.
Heavy.
Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says, I think we can all agree Back to the Future is the godfather of time travel films. The Time Machine was also great.
Was the Time Machine – that's the classic one, right?
Based that's on the classic, yeah.
I think I saw the old and new version of that movie, and I enjoyed them both. Did you guys see either of those films?
I read the book.
Yeah, I saw with the guy from – yeah, I saw the new one. I can't remember.
The new one,
Remember.
I think we went and saw the new one together, possibly.
We may have. It's all a blur.
Let's see.
We do so much together.
Walking the dog. Eric Halson says – Oh, no. Oh, here we go. Love it, but must admit that part of the fun is complaining about its implementation. Loved Looper, but the dilemmas. Wow, I'm honestly a little afraid to watch Primer after seeing the plot lines mapped out in graphic form. I've never seen that movie, but I've always wanted to for that same reason.
Primer?
Yeah. Did I see Primer or did I not?
I can't tell you that.
No, you can't. Are you sure?
I don't know if you've seen it. I saw it. I watched it on Netflix. Yeah.
Oh, maybe I did see this movie. It's like hardcore sci-fi, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Super major hardcore. Yeah. I'm going to jump in and do my answer because I actually don't mind time travel movies as much as I crapped on the X-Men's time travel. I just feel like you need to go one of two directions with it. And the two directions are the sort of Back to the Future Bill and Ted's direction, where time travel is literally just a plot device to tell a story that's interesting and fun. And you don't get too crazy on thinking about what is happening around it because the rest of the stuff is cool and fun and you have a good time. Or you go the Primer route, which is where time travel is so friggin' heavy and so like well thought out and like crazy that you would have to sit for hours and literally chart it out to figure out what was happening and how it was happening, because I think it's the only way to get around paradoxes is to like make it baffling, which is what it should be. It should be a massively confusing concept to do time travel and how time travel works. And that's kind of what Primer does. Primer is all about like shifting time in time. Like they jump back, what is it? I think a day tops, right? Or 12 hours before it like melts your brain or something like that. And the way they do it is in this like sort of like machine what do you call it? A sense deprivation machine, sort of. And
yeah,
it's very interesting. And when you watch it, it's like, geez, that's insane to watch. And I agree, Looper, I thought, but I think Looper falls somewhere sort of in the middle. I didn't get too caught up in the paradoxes towards the end that they kind of unravel, because I thought that the movie for the most part was entertaining and fun. The time travel stuff didn't get to me too much, but I could see why it bothers some people. Eric, Echap 33 says, love it. Back to the Future, X-Men Days of Future Past. We're sorry, Eric. Terminator, Star Trek, Continuum on Sci-Fi. I like the possibilities it opens up.
Did you guys watch Continuum?
I watched the first few episodes.
Yeah, did you like it?
I did not.
I think it's on Netflix now. I think I might start watching it.
It is. I want to try it again.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll leave it at that.
Please continue then.
All right. Andrew Baker, A. Baker N7 says, you may want to add a spoiler warning to my answer. Probably my favorite use of time travel was Days of Future Past, where the X-Men travel back in time to stop Brett Ratner. Because it's true. Right. I'll say mine real quick. I'm not a fan of time travel in movies. I think there's no real reason for it most of the time. And my least favorite use of it ever was in Lost, because I think that further complicated everything. God, yeah. Lost was already about time jumps when, you know, in terms of flashbacks and things of that nature and the mysteries of the island. Then when they introduced time travel as well and the whole cast like jumped to the 70s, I was like, okay, what is going on? And things were getting rewritten and characters were disappearing. And
oh, but then you get Rebecca Mader.
Mm. Who's that?
Charlotte.
Oh, the redhead?
Yeah.
You like her?
Yep. She's on Once Upon a Time.
You like her now? You like her?
She was on Once Upon a Time as
She's
well.
She's a witch.
She was quite good.
Oh, quite good, huh?
Quite good.
Ooh la la.
Yep.
Okay. That was my answer.
Question me no further on this.
Question me no further.
I'm going to read this one. Let me read this one because I think you should read the next one, correct?
Okay. Yes,
right.
I should read the next one. Go ahead.
Yes. There you go. Nate Buckman at Nate D says Bill and Ted because Wild Stallion, cue guitar riff. Also Station.
Station.
I think Bill and Ted is winning out here, I feel like.
For sure. Because it's like a tongue-in-cheek and it didn't get too complicated, you know?
Exactly.
Graham at Prosperous Cheat says Time Splitters was a fun game series. The idea of going back and helping yourself through an area was pretty unique. Time Splitters is an amazing game series, and I do not understand for the life of me why somebody cannot make a new one for a current gen platform, because it would be amazing.
Was that did I co-op that game with you?
Yes, we co-opted it together. Time Splitters was like the team that I think the real GoldenEye team made Time Splitters, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then there was this rumor of like a new Time Splitters game, like around, I don't know, like a couple of years ago. And then it just kind of like disappeared. But it was awesome. It did time travel. It was supposed to be like a funny game. You know, there were like monkeys you could fight with, and like there's crazy weapons and the time travel thing. They just made jokes. Like the guy had like a signature line. He's like, and it's time to split.
Yeah,
somebody would like roll their eyes every time he said it, and it was just a great game. It was a great implementation. Along those same lines, there was a game that I thought was like really underrated called Time Shift that came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It was a Sierra Entertainment game, and it was basically one of those games that used time manipulation to like as part of the combat system. So you could like slow down time and make yourself faster and reverse things, and then it had like a little time travel aspect, kind of like in the same way you can there's kind of like rifts in BioShock Infinite where you can sort of see into the future and stuff like that. Time Shift had stuff like that in it as well, and I thought it did a really good job as far as like a kind of like a middle of the road popcorn action shooter game. I thought it was really underrated, so that's my answer.
Awesome.
Rob Manning, who is at Manning INGR on Twitter, says he says he's trolling. He says Terminator 2 was a sham, and Terminator 1 Reese claimed that the time machine was smashed and Skynet was on the ropes, yet Terminator 2 happens. Huh, that's a good point. I didn't even have to really think about that.
Yeah, but how can we do our Miles Dyson if there was never a Terminator 2? Like, that's like a staple of this podcast, I think.
So good. At Cliffy Joel closes it out for us with what I think is the clear winner of whatever this battle was that we didn't really create.
Yeah.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Nuff said. I think, like we all said, right? Just so much fun. You just kind of you move along with it.
Yeah. Historical characters interacting with each other and having fun.
Yeah. Kind of amazing.
Yeah. I hope they make that third one.
One day.
Someday.
Cool. Well, that about wraps things up, right? You want to do a shout out?
Yeah, go for
it. Let's do a shout out. So frequent listener and friend of the podcast, Kate Dollarhide, has a quarterly journal of fan writing that she is in the process of starting called Alternate Universe Almanac. We wanted to give the Alternate Universe Almanac a little bit of a shout out. If you want to submit something to the Alternate Universe Almanac, you can. And if you go to aualmanac.com, you can submit stuff there if you're into fan fiction and creative writing. And you can follow them on Twitter, and that's aualmanac, at aualmanac on Twitter. So we love creative writing. We like fanfic and stuff, and we like that she's starting this. So definitely support Kate Dollarhide and the AU Almanac.
Awesome.
Cool. And we'll be back next week. E3 is right around the corner, so we'll probably be talking about some games next week because there's a lot going to be announced very soon.
Oh, man. Yep. You're right.
That's kind of crazy. And
you guys think there'll be a new Xbox?
Another one.
There might actually be a new Nintendo system. There is a rumor of that.
I've heard that rumor too, so that's going to be kind of scary.
Yeah.
But you guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate, and you can email us, and that is Matt Scott Ash Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And you can find us on Facebook.
Find us on Facebook.
And that is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And we will see you guys next week.
Have a good week.
X-Men, I really do love you. I'm sorry. Please.
We're going to talk a little bit about Wolfenstein. Let me start again. I'm distracted.
Let's talk a little bit about Wolfenstein. What do you say about that? Then we'll talk about the amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. Spider-Man. A little rusty today.
It's gold.
Anyhow.